Welcome to Healthcare by the Numbers, a podcast that uncovers what's driving healthcare transformation. Join us each episode as Caravan Health leaders interview the brightest minds inspiring healthcare innovation and discuss the numbers which have shaped their thinking. Welcome, everyone. I'm your host, Todd Searles, Vice President of Business Development, Sales, and Marketing at Caravan Health. And this is Healthcare by the Numbers, a podcast that explores the numbers driving change throughout our industry. To learn more about Caravan Health, this podcast, and to check out our episodes of the show, visit caravanhealth.com. And be sure to sign up for our newsletter to be notified of future episodes. You can also visit our program page on Healthcare Now Radio and follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook under our username at Caravan Health. Today, we are pleased to be talking with guests from our client Olmsted Medical Center in Rochester, Minnesota. Nikki Rubel, Carrie Kranz, Tricia Schilling, and Emily Goldman are our on-the-ground clinical health experts at Olmsted Medical Center. We are looking forward to a conversation about how they engage with their community around healthcare, why advanced care planning is so important, and how it can be used to improve patient care, and how Olmsted has had, hopefully, a positive experience with our Caravan-supported ACO. Welcome to the podcast, everyone. And my co-host for this episode is my colleague, Kim Morgan, clinical leader here at Caravan Health. Kim works directly with Olmsted Medical Center, so I'm pleased to welcome her as my partner in this discussion today. Welcome, Kim.
Hi, Todd. Thanks. Glad to be here.
Well, at Caravan Health, we've been working in rural accountable care since the very beginning and have watched our rural partners thrive through practice transformation and population health management. So we're looking forward to what we're going to discuss today. But before we get started, I would like to get a little more acquainted and hear about everyone's roles and backgrounds. So Nikki, if you wouldn't mind getting us started by providing kind of an overview of Olmsted Medical Center, your role, and specifically your background.
Sure. Thank you, Todd. So first, just a little background on Olmsted Medical Center, or OMC. We are a fully accredited nonprofit organization. We've been providing care to Rochester and our surrounding community since 1949. We have over 22 locations, including two multi-specialty clinics offering over 35 specialties, acute care and fast care clinics, a level 4 trauma hospital with a 24-hour emergency room. Our mission is the delivery of exceptional patient care, focusing on caring, quality, safety, and service. And our vision is to be the healthcare provider of choice in our service area by leading in quality, access, and service. So I'm proud to be part of OMC and help carry out our mission and vision. I've been a nurse for 23 years, with the last 14 of those years here at OMC. I started here as an OB nurse, and in 2010, I started my leadership journey, serving in various leadership roles, which has led me to my current role as Director of Operations for our primary care division, which includes overseeing all of our primary care, acute care, fast care, anti-COA clinics, as well as our prescription line and prior auth team. And then as part of my role here, I also serve as co-ACO champion. With that, I'd like to introduce Carrie Kranz.
Good morning. I'm Carrie Kranz. I am the manager of clinical operations within our primary care division. I oversee our family medicine, internal medicine, and care coordination departments within our Rochester area. I will pass it on to Tricia.
Hi, everyone. My name is Tricia Schilling. I'm the manager of social services and a new department called Active Aging Services. Active Aging Services works primarily with folks 55 and older, or 55 and better, and all the family members that are involved with making quality care available to keep folks active and their wishes known to others, including a big chunk of Active Aging Services is working with advanced care planning. I'll hand it over to Emily for an introduction.
Good morning. I'm Emily Goldman. I've been with OMC since 2016, started out as a virtual care specialist, working with all of our telehealth options we offered at OMC, and then transitioned into the role I'm in right now as a clinical informaticist on the ambulatory side, working mainly with our ambulatory folks, and then also with the patient portal, and still with telehealth options we offer.
Thank you all. Olmsted Medical Center has been working with Caravan Health since 2016 and has found great success within the Caravan Health ACO. And we think they're a perfect guest for today's podcast because of how they have succeeded in advanced care planning, collaboration between their care teams, staff education, provider engagement, and goal setting.
Well, and I think that's a perfect segue into why we wanted to spotlight not only the great work you guys are doing, but also some of the numbers. As you may know, in each of our shows, we like to spotlight and frame the overall conversation with some of the numbers that impact the industry today. And so relevant to the subjects at hand, we found that recent studies have determined that just less than 37% of US adults have completed an advanced directive. And of course, you would expect it that it's slightly higher among patients who have chronic disease. And a recent national study tracked those over 60. So if we really focus on our Medicare population here, those who died between 2000 and 2010 found that the proportion of people with advanced directives was actually around 72%. It actually increased from 47% at the beginning of the study to the end. Accidents are the third leading cause of death in Minnesota. A recent study of Medicaid managed care plans found that 91% of the plans supported activities to address social determinants of health. And some of the core measures that we found that impact Minnesota patients age 65 plus include multiple chronic conditions, insufficient sleep, and physician distress. Physicians drive 75 to 85% of all quality and cost decisions, according to a study. And a survey by Gallup highlights the importance of engaged physicians doing this. For one hospital alone, there was a 26% increase in productivity between engaged physicians versus their peers who were not as engaged. So those are some of the numbers we found to help shape our discussion today. Nikki, Carrie, Tricia, Emily, you are right on the front line, improving rural health and implementing population health initiatives in your community inside of Minnesota. So which of these numbers just jump out at you? What is kind of the focus point that you found really aligns with some of the work that you're doing?
Sure, I can kick us off there. I think one is the accidents, right, being the third leading cause of death in Minnesota. So, which that just speaks to the importance of advanced care planning, not just for our active aging adults or those living with chronic diseases, but also those 18 and up, you know, and having those conversations and really engaging everyone that is 18 and older with advanced care planning. And then also, you know, realizing that we have a lot of work to do to close our healthcare gaps. And all of our initiatives are around improving the health outcomes of our patients. And that is collaborating with not just our internal partners, our external partners as well, including Caravan Health, right? And how can we work together to really decrease those, close those healthcare gaps? Tricia, anything that you wanted to add?
Sure. I guess hearing too that it's in the 30 percentile range of folks that have completed advanced care plans, and we have found that to be pretty accurate with our population as well. While people are interested in hearing about advanced care planning and getting the packet, it's another challenge to have them actually think about what their goals are and then get them in writing and then share them with their active agent or agents. And then that very important last piece of getting it on file so that we have it in our EMR so that it can be shared with their primary care provider, with emergency room docs, and since we're on Epic, so it can be shared with other folks that share Epic too. So there's lots of different steps that are involved, but yet it's so important.
One of the things that is, you know, sorry to kind of jump in and kind of focus on something, it's really interesting to me. So I have to admit, I have to raise my hand. I don't have one on file, but I've had this conversation with my wife Mindy quite a bit. Especially after losing my father just recently. Would you say the number of patients that you see, they may not have an advanced care plan, but when you talk to them, they express the exact same thing? No, we talk about it all the time. I have a really good idea. And what are the concerns with just having, quote unquote, a conversation with somebody?
Yeah, I definitely have heard that, you know, patients are interested, and yes, give me the packet, but then it's helping them through the next steps. And that starts with that difficult conversation, right? So we all know difficult conversations are hard to have, especially with patients. And talking about advanced care planning or what to do in the event something should happen to them. So helping our teams understand the importance of advanced care planning and having those crucial conversations is number one. So really educating our teams, why is advanced care planning important? Why is having this conversation with our patients and their families important? Because if our staff understand the importance and the why behind it, it really sets them up to help explain better to our patients, and then that follow through. Some staff, you know, prefer scripting or talking points. So it's providing talking points is a great tool to help staff feel more comfortable and confident with those conversations. And then before you know it, staff are able to have conversations without any scripting, and as it becomes more natural for them.
And well, a conversation is so important. And I think sometimes when folks see the advanced directive, ours, for example, is 8 pages in length. And then we hand them education information and a checklist and additional information about myths and facts for organ tissue and eye donation. And so it can be a pretty hefty pack of papers, which can be overwhelming too. So while we want to encourage them to at least think about what their goals would be and have the conversation, we've actually now started an abbreviated version of the advanced directive, which has really been well accepted from patients. So the abbreviated version still meets Minnesota law in that it assigns somebody to make the decisions should they not be able to communicate them. And then there is some space if they still want to write down specific goals. But then all they need to do is get it either witnessed by two witnesses or notarized, and then it's done. So it's really a front and back piece of paper. And yeah, the conversation is important, but again, if they are in the ER and folks are in crisis, sometimes it's not easy to remember everything that you had talked about during the conversation. And also the doctor would need to know who do you turn to, who have you had those conversations with. And so that's where this abbreviated form has really, it's been a winning choice, I think, for a lot of people that were just too overwhelmed. And then they can always add to the advanced directive or do the full advanced directive down the road too, once they've given it more time. We've implemented, we now call it the 5 D's as a reminder of when to review your advanced directive, because that's the other step too. So you get it done and then you sign it off 2021. How are you feeling in 2031 and 2041 as we get older? And so we've initiated the 5 D's as a fun way to remind folks to update or at least review your advanced directive. One of the D's is a decade. So each decade, relook at it, a new diagnosis. One of our division chairs added this D and we liked it so much. It's wedding. And the emphasis on the D in wedding. So once you get married, take a look at your advance directive again and see if you want to redo who the agents would be. And then the opposite of that would be divorce, if there's a divorce, and then a death. So those 5 D's have, even looking around at you all, put some smiles on your faces when you think about, oh yeah, I really should revisit that and or have a conversation with somebody new in my life, given this time in my life.
I love that, Tricia. I think that you're right. There's so many opportunities to review, and you guys do a fantastic job with your annual wellness visits. And that's one of those places that, again, you're looking at, do they have new disease? So is that a place that you found it really important to incorporate those advanced care planning conversations?
Absolutely. We have incorporated that into that flow of the conversation, you know, starting with that support staff and the patients, you know, starting that conversation, providing that information, the packets, you know, to the patient. So that is definitely embedded into our annual visits.
When you're talking about kind of the 5 D's and educating, you know, that is as much about messaging, I think. So how do you approach this to get the message out? Is it just directed at your patients? Do you run community campaigns? Do you work with community stakeholders? How, you know, because in part, like you say, the big thing is getting people motivated to do this. And sometimes motivation comes from repetition. And so how do we repeat the message and getting it out there and emphasizing it?
Yeah, the answer is yes to all of the above, what you just listed. This year too, we took a approach where we are starting our education with the clinicians. So in January, we started with the ABCs of advanced directives with our clinicians. We had a grand rounds session with them, and we also did a clinician meeting presentation with them. And those were all recorded too. And the clinicians, they really do attend those and listen to those and eval those. So we started this year with clinicians and then worked our way to the rest of the staff. We've made it mandatory that staff are learning more about it. If they've completed an events directive, it's easier for them to encourage other folks to complete one too. When we have students, we're encouraging them to get their advanced directives done. And so we really started in-house this year. We even had a campaign for staff. Do you have an advanced directive done org-wide as staff? And if not, contact one of us in social services. Let's sit down and talk about it. And so our goal was by the end of the year that we would reach all the departments and that we would increase the advanced directives on file. That's one way that we're tracking through Epic, how many folks have advanced directives on file. Our goal was to increase it by 50% from January to December. We've increased it by 50% through June. So we already reached our goal, but we're gonna keep going and keep adding on. We like to get out into the community. We speak at 125 Live, which is our local senior citizen center. Coming up in August, we're gonna be at the farmers market. We go to a walk around the world too. So we've also found it really important to make sure advanced directives are available to folks in different languages. And so walk around the world is really about inclusivity and diversity in our community. And so we're there too, talking to folks about the importance of advanced care planning. So this year, again, our focus was starting internally and making sure everybody can talk to it and provide that education and answer questions of our patients. And then we're going to focus the second half of the year on our community and patients.
That is fantastic. And I love, one of the things I love working with you guys, you set goals. You know, you really look at the problem, you do a deep dive into it. And I love how you started internally because these are hard conversations. And so what made you decide to think about how do we educate our staff first and go outside of just your clinical departments, you went to all your departments. What was the thought behind that? And what would you tell another organization that might be wanting to go down this journey?
At OMC, a lot of times the conversation is going to start with the primary care provider or his or her nurse. And so that's where we wanted to start this year. And again, we're also starting with the very basics. What is an advanced directive? Is it the same thing as a living will, as a power of attorney, as a durable power of attorney? So our education this year is very basic. In the past years, we've really honed in on the PULSE document, for example, and making sure people understand what that order set is. But this year we're starting again, really at ground zero and then continuing to build up from there. So, and we're hoping that again, and we know that our primary care providers just do a fantabulous job of working and building relationships with their patients. And so they also need to be the ones to bring up the 5 D's and say, okay, you've got one on file, but let's take a look at that again. And now that, you know, Medicare does reimburse for visits too, we're starting to make sure that the providers know how to document and also code appropriately. So we're also measuring those codes too.
I think it's important to point out too, is be relentless, you know, in the education and the communication. And Tricia had mentioned some avenues earlier, but it's just that continuous education and communication and the follow through. Tricia and her team have done a wonderful job even creating that audit process. You know, where can we do a little bit better? You know, are there any themes? You know, where is there individualized education that is needed, whether it's mm-hmm. with a certain provider, a certain clinic, and that sort of thing. So just being relentless, and before you know it, you know, it's just ingrained in our normal practice.
Yeah, that's the focus, is really to build that as a culture, just so that it's second nature, that even if they're eye rolling, no, I don't have an advance directive, you've already asked me this, you know, another time. Well, you know, then introduce the abbreviated advance directive and say, well, would you be interested in getting this form done instead? So, and the individualized education too. I appreciate you bringing that up too, Nikki. We do audits for hospitalized patients in advanced care planning and for ambulatory advanced care planning. And we look specifically at who did the documentation. And if there was some concern in that documentation, we follow up in real time with that either provider or the nurse, and just do some education and explanation and answer the whys, so that moving forward too, it'll become second nature to document appropriately too.
Well, and I think that is a great lead in to my next question, which is all about, you know, obviously we've had unprecedented times with the pandemic, and sometimes, unfortunately, you know, bad times create good opportunities. And in this case, was there an opportunity to really focus on advanced care planning with your patients in the community because of COVID? And what unique challenges did that present to you? Like, was there a decrease in visits such that you weren't having these conversations, or were patients bringing this up more? And then on the challenges side, to go a little bit deeper, you know, technology challenges or, you know, staff training in terms of getting them up to speed, did it take away, or did COVID allow you some downtime, unfortunately, to really hone in on this type of training?
We never stalled with COVID. Yeah. I think that's one thing, especially on the primary care side of things. It never seemed to slow down for us. Patients, you know, we were providing different avenues for them to see us. Even with that, though, we maintained open doors, and that was opportunity to continue to have these conversations. I think it really comes down to, you know, whether we're in a pandemic or not, it really comes down to that transparency and that strong clinical leadership, an active social service department, and a strong, very strong IT team. We can pull all these pieces together, optimize our EMR while keeping our teams efficient. We had to move very quickly with the pandemic with many things. And so that was a positive. You know, we were able to roll out and optimize our EMR a lot quickly, you know, bring things up to the forefront. And Emily can maybe speak to that a little bit more too. But Tricia, I don't know if you wanted to add any or carry any challenges that COVID may have presented.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, I'm sure everyone is saying the same thing. You know, the challenge is COVID, the pandemic. You know, we were all, you know, touched by this, and, you know, the fears, the unknowns, the constant changes, you know, impacted our organization, our patients, our staff. But the OMC, very resilient, continue to push through, and just leaning on each group, as Nikki said, you know, informatics was, you know, very important in all the process changes, quickly implementing telemedicine, the telehealth visits, MyChart, the training that went in to all of that to get that implemented in our departments. And so I just think, you know, yeah, it was definitely a challenge, but a huge success for all of us to kind of look back on the last, you know, year or so.
I think OMC works very well together, whether it's IT, clinical informatics, or clinical staff. We work very well together understanding what each group needs and how can we implement this fast and quickly for our patients and efficient for our providers and nursing staff to document this into the EMR quickly, just so that is a continuous thing for patients when they come back, that it's in their chart, they can see it, the providers can see it, and also another provider can see it that is at or using Epic as well. So just using that team building stuff, we're very good at that.
Yeah, and I'm gonna just chime in here with and ask that question, because it is one of the things you guys are very, very good at, looking at who needs to be part of this team to make something successful. So how would you suggest to another organization if they were going to pull in all their teams? How do you look at what teams you should pull to the table to be stakeholders as you are, you know, rolling out something like advanced care plans?
So I think depending on what the initiative is, we tend to take a phased approach, kind of like what Tricia was saying earlier, you know, kind of start at ground zero and then work our way up, maybe piloting initiatives in one or two areas. And that way it allows us to minimize pain points when we do roll it out, an initiative to other areas. But defining a timeline, offering adequate time for education, for questions to be answered from our staff, for our staff to be engaged, you know, and then providing many avenues for that education to happen. Tricia mentioned that we will often record some education, but also to get people engaged, it's getting those key players at the table. And it's not just one discipline, it's a multidisciplinary approach. So getting champions at the table, and not the same 10 people, but getting a variety of people at the table, because they can help champion the change in that initiative and help their colleagues along the way. I think that is one thing that's very important, in that we have been really strengthening that process over the last few years, especially.
And asking those at the table too, who are we missing? Mm-hmm. You know, and again, everybody's feedback is so important and respected.
Well, I tell you, this has been wonderful. I really, you know, I smile at some of the lingo that you guys have created in order to keep buzzwords stuck in people's minds. You know, the 5 D's, the walk around the world. I love that. Was that yours, or was that, excuse me, the community's?
That's the community's, but we're sure to participate and sponsor.
It's such a great thing, right? Because then you become even more integral to your community, right? They can see the healthcare workers as their friends, their neighbors, and really truly caring about that support. And again, doesn't matter your background, your native language, you're there to support them and help them. Well, it has definitely been a pleasure having you on Healthcare by the Numbers. We're running out of time, so I thought I'd open it up to each of you and say, any final thoughts, any success stories you want to leave us with? You know, something to spotlight so that our listeners can take home and kind of, you know, learn from your experiences. So final thoughts.
I think with any change or initiative, my advice is just always keep an open mind. Feed your hunger for that change and help your teams by truly collaborating with your ACO partner, truly collaborating, partnering with internal and external partners, and then making sure that everyone's invested in that common goal. And that's really important, you know, explaining the why, getting key players to the table. You know, we wouldn't be able to do it single-handedly. You know, it takes a village, and that's internally and externally.
Carrie?
For successes, yeah, I mean, definitely just kind of what we've been speaking to is just, you know, we have been resilient through this past year and a half, and just working together with your team, reaching out, and just really understanding your vision to remain focused. And you don't have to, you know, get there right now. We will get there, and there's phases, there's stages, but just, you know, really be, you know, remaining, you know, vigilant to where that kind of end goal is. So.
Emily?
I would just say be patient. It's not always going to click for one group as it is for another, but just know everybody's end goal is to be here for the patients and make sure their health is at the best it can be.
Wonderful. And Tricia?
I would like to share a quick success story too that involves IT's assistance too during COVID. We have clinical social workers going into nursing homes pre-COVID to provide psychotherapy. And then, of course, nursing homes closed down to visitors, including psychotherapists. And so we were able to work with our IT department to get laptops. We had a dirty laptop and a clean laptop, so to keep everybody safe on the nursing home side of things. And we were able to do telehealth visits that way. But we were also able to expand our psychotherapy service into 15 different nursing homes as compared to the 6 where the provider would be able to drive. One of the neat things that came about halfway through our telehealth experience was we were able to have groups. And when I say groups, we had in our first group, 7 patients from 7 different nursing homes, all on the same call. And they were all able to talk about the good and the bad and the ugly in their post-acute setting. And then through a guided clinical practitioner assisting with those conversations. What we're looking at now is doing advanced care planning groups. And so if patients in care centers, assisted livings are interested in learning more, they can join online through telehealth through that same program that we've been able to work with IT on and do some more advanced care planning education and hopefully help guide them through that. Clinical social workers are able to do that and still use that code for reimbursement too.
Another quick success story as well is around our annual wellness visits. So prior to COVID, we were really struggling to complete those annual wellness visits across the board. And it really speaks to the importance of goal setting. So we worked with and targeted certain clinical areas that seemed to be struggling and engaged them to be part of that goal setting. Realizing that each clinical department, even though we're one system, you know, clinics are spread over a 60-mile radius and serving different communities, and every community is a little bit different. So things are going to work just a little bit differently in each of the clinics. So engaging them to come up with a process that works well for them to make sure that those annual wellness visits are getting completed actually catapulted our annual wellness visit completion rates to well over 60% across the org. And this particular clinic actually went from like a maybe 10 to 20% completion rate to steadily in the 70%.
Wow. That's amazing. I love to hear that. That's, you know, again, in bad times, there's good opportunity. And I think that just goes to show that people rally during crisis and find ways to overcome challenges. And Olmsted has definitely proven that. So I want to thank you all for sharing those stories with us today, your experiences, for joining Kim and I. For our audience, if you'd like to learn more about Olmsted Medical Center and their work, you can find them at www.olmmed.org. That's O-L-M as in Mary, med.org, and LinkedIn at Olmsted Medical Center. Kim and I want to thank everyone for listening today. We are Caravan Health, and this has been Healthcare by the Numbers. Until next time, take care.